What up? It's the Crossover Pod Friday edition. I'm Howard Beck, senior writer for Sports Illustrated. Postseason is nearly upon us, and here to talk about two of the most fascinating teams with me is my good friend Logan Murdoch of The Ringer. Logan had an excellent piece recently about Kevin Durant. Spent a lot of time with him out here in New York. Got a lot of insight about KD's mindset during what has been a very strange and chaotic season, and yet somehow Kevin Durant seems unperturbed about it all because he's Kevin Durant. And it's an interesting profile of him by Logan, an interesting chat about that story. We also touch on KD's previous team, the Warriors, where Logan was a beat writer for several years. The Nets, of course, were predicted to win it all, and now they're a play-in team. The Warriors, we thought, were ready for a revival and to make another deep run, and maybe they can still do it if they're healthy. A lot of ifs. At full strength, both teams that no one wants to deal with. Plus, we chat a little bit about LeBron's recent declaration that Steph Curry is the player he'd most want to team up with. What does that all mean? What did Steph's response mean? Logan's got some thoughts on that too. Before we get to all that, a quick reminder, please rate, review, and subscribe to The Crossover wherever you get your podcasts, and hit me with all your feedback on Twitter at Howard Beck. Okay, my chat with Logan Murdoch is coming up next, so stick around.
This is The Crossover, an NBA show hosted by Sports Illustrated's Chris Mannix and Howard Beck.
It's a whole new level for you and me, Chris, this relationship.
Like and subscribe for the best weekly NBA content these two are capable of.
What does that mean?
Could be the best duo ever.
I don't see how you can beat that.
Here they are, Chris Mannix and Howard Beck.
Now, very pleased to be joined by one of the best young writers and podcasters out there, and he's a real one. And the reason I know he's a real one is because he co-hosts a podcast called Real Ones, and if he weren't a real one, that would be false advertising. Here's the real one, Logan Murdoch. Logan, how are you, sir?
What's up, buddy? This is an honor, man. Thanks for having me on, bro.
I'm
really excited.
This is great. We're going to get sick of each other. We had dinner a couple weeks ago in Brooklyn. I came on your pod, Real Ones. Not the Real Ones, just Real Ones. And now you're on my pod. This is great. By the time the playoffs are over, you and I just, we'll have nothing left to talk about.
I could never get sick of you, Howard, ever. I could never get sick of you, bro.
I appreciate that. I think many people would disagree. We're recording this as we head to the final weekend of this season, and there's still like seedings up in the air, but like we have a sense of what the landscape is, and I think the landscape in a word is just kind of messy. I don't think we have an overwhelming favorite. All due respect to the Suns as team with by far the best record, all due respect to the Bucks as defending champs, I don't feel like we have an overwhelming favorite. And on top of that, Logan, this was a season we began, lest anybody forget, with an alleged super team in LA. Hello, Lakers, not in the play-in. And an alleged super team in my backyard here in Brooklyn, Nets entering as a play-in team. The Warriors got back together for like 32 seconds or something, but they're not whole and Steph isn't back on the... Like it's messy. I don't have a better word for it. What do you think of where we are in this in the championship race as it gets as the play-ins and playoffs are coming?
It's tough, man, because I picked the Lakers and the Nets to make the finals this year. And, you know, both of them, there's a chance that both will not even make the playoffs. So, you know, that tells you everything you need to know. I think that the season has been interesting because I feel like it's been what everyone has wanted or said that they wanted a few years ago when, you know, every year you can just pencil the Cavs and the Warriors to go to the finals and everybody was talking, oh, we need more parity. We need all of that. We need to see a diverse set of teams contending for titles. And I think that you've gotten that so far. But I think the other side of that is every team has question marks that are in contention. You know, you talk about Philly, you know, they have a 1-2 punch, but they don't know if that's going to be a hard enough 1-2 punch with Harden and Embiid. And then you go down to Brooklyn, they might not even make the playoffs. You know, we'll get into that in a little bit. You got the disappointment of the Lakers, but also even with the contenders, like the Suns, really good team, steamrolled throughout the entire season. I still am like 80% convinced that they're going to go to the finals and also 20% convinced that like Chris Paul is going to get injured and it's over. You know, knock on wood, hopefully that doesn't happen. But even with the Warriors, do they have a front court, you know, and will they be healthy enough to even get there? Or there's so many question marks. And I think, you know, on the other side of it, it's what we wanted. But, you know, I do miss the days of just having like a juggernaut dynasty come rolling through and just having that storyline. But it's fun. It's been fun.
I think we struggle with it, Logan. I think like the general NBA world media fans, maybe even the league, struggles with this two-sided coin, right? Because dynasties can be fun. Dynasties are polarizing, so you're either all in rooting for or rooting against. There's very little in between. It defines things for the postseason because you have somebody automatically to root against if you want to see the dynasty fall. The Warriors were like the darlings when they first won, then they became the evil empire. And so, but it gave people something very easy to grasp onto. Yeah. But the flip side is, especially when the dynasty is in a bigger market, which we've seen with the Lakers, we've seen with the Warriors, you want everybody else to believe like they've got a shot, right? And mm-hmm. so right now, because there's no real super team, like even if the Nets make it through the play-in and are in the playoffs, they're not a super team because they've got two, not three. I say a super team is three stars. They've got their two. Other teams have two, but and that's why we don't have an overwhelming favorite, right? There is no big three for the last couple of years. So it is more wide open. Is that better or worse? Like, I don't know. I guess it's eye of the beholder stuff.
I think this the biggest thing is we're seeing just a case study in how and how not to build a team right now, right? I mean, at first it was, hey, get, you know, three generational superstars and put them on one team. You know, let's just do that. Let's do that. And that works to a certain extent, but generational stars don't, you know, grow on trees. So then after, you know, you have this wave of superstardom and you have the Miami Heat and then you end up having the Warriors. You know, this is a copycat league just like how everybody else goes. So that's what everyone is chasing for the quick fix to get a title, get somebody to help you win. You see that in L.A. with, the addition of Russell Westbrook. And I think now you're starting to see that now I think the league is going back to now. Just we're going to, you know, try to build through the draft. And if we do have a star, great. But we want to put pieces around these two stars in order to make a deeper team. It's pretty fascinating how where we've gone as – you know, with GMs and how they approach team building now, because the best team in the league right now is the Phoenix Suns. And did they have three super duper stars? No, they have someone who can be a superstar in Devin Booker, and then they have an aging star in Chris Paul, and they're doing a damn thing. So it's been a great case study in how to build a team, and it's going to be fun to see how the league as these crops of players like the Kevin Durant's, like the LeBrons, like the Chris Paul's, how it's going to be interesting to see when they get going towards the end of their career, how teams approach building rosters.
For sure. And I think like the interesting thing about like the Bucks and Suns, who, I mean, look, all these months later, we're going like, well, maybe we're just going to see Bucks Suns repeat.
Yeah.
It's kind of looking that way, especially, you know, once the Celtics lost Robert Williams and the Nets are in their weird state and the Sixers are hard to like, we may just be heading there. And as different as the Suns and Bucks are, they're actually similar in that they're each of them, their best player was a guy they drafted late lottery, Booker and Giannis. And then it was grafting on other pieces, right? You know, Brooke Lopez and Chris Middleton and Drew Holiday, those guys are all imported. And the Nets, or the Suns, excuse me, like they drafted three key guys in Booker, Ayton, Bridges, but Chris Paul's an add-on, Jay Crowder's an add-on. Like they're similar in the way that they kind of evolved. So it will be interesting.
It's funny though, because I remember, I don't know if you were having this feeling, but we were both in Milwaukee for the finals. I think you were in Milwaukee.
I was. You were in Milwaukee. Yes, right before and I broke my shoulder. Yeah.
Yeah. Sorry about that, buddy. But there was an air of like, okay, we're not going to see I think this is an anomaly matchup. We're not going to see this. This isn't going to be something that we see year in and year out. And honestly, I thought this was the Suns. Last year was the Suns' like shot at it. This was the shot. You know, the Lakers were down. They're going to come back and win the West. And it's just the world order is going to be back. But it's been interesting to see that like these two teams, honestly, if they stay healthy – and they're good. They can be contending for finals appearances for years to come.
Which is not interesting
to consider.
Not only that it's potentially years to come, although Chris Paul's longevity will have a lot to do with the Suns' ability to do that, I think. But also, like, I mean, a year ago or last July, whenever the finals were, people were still talking about this in kind of this, like, is it a little bit of a fluke? And the Suns, you know, they caught all these teams when they're missing key guys or whatever. Like, the Suns in particular, people did not want to accept. And, like, they have just come back with – like, this whole season has been about just, like, sticking it to everybody who doubted their
legitimacy. I love those teams. Yes. That just say, I don't care. And I'm mad. The teams that find something to be mad about and use it constructively. Love that.
Yes.
When those teams happen.
I don't mind it at all as long as it's not too manufactured, right? Like, if you've got a beef or if you've got a chip on your shoulder because of the way you're perceived and you use it as fuel, that's cool. The ones that are, like, a little bit exaggerated or just kind of manufactured, you know, LeBron doing the washed king thing, whatever. Like, nobody actually ever said that. You just kind of made up that hashtag. I mean, there was some stuff out there in the ether, but...
Yeah. When you do it, though, you got to back it up. Suns have backed it up, but I remember those Rockets teams, the run it back teams, those... were so disheartening. So I hope that the Suns don't just do all this stuff to flame out in the second round. I really don't. If they're going to do it, they better go to the finals.
Agreed. Yes. And if they don't, then they're inviting, like, twice the backlash for, aha, see, we were right about you in the first place. I don't suspect that'll be the case. Although I will say this, the Suns, while are legitimately the favorites in the West right now, if the Warriors are whole, if Steph is Steph, Draymond is Draymond, and Klay is whatever percentage of Klay he is, like, I'm more liable to give the benefit of the doubt to the Warriors and that group that has done it all together so many times over. There are some age and injury issues, no doubt, but if they're healthy, whatever healthy means at this point, I think I still lean Warriors over Suns, but they're the only team in that field in the West that I think has that shot.
I've been trying to say that on the Ringer and things like that, but the Ringer is just big on the Suns right now. I kind of got a duck and just be like, oh, you know, the Warriors are still there. You know, they can do it. They can still figure it out. They still got, you know, and plus, you know, the Warriors haven't been healthy this season, but they've had big wins. You know, they've had big wins early on. They beat the Suns on the road. They beat the Jazz when the Jazz were a thing, and you know they've had the wins that they've needed to have. You know, the other day when they beat the Jazz at home, coming back in the final quarter without Steph on the on the active roster, and then to go back and beat Sac, you know they're making some noise too. It's gonna be fun. I don't know who's going to win between the Suns and the Warriors, but that if they're all healthy, that's going to be a fun series.
Yeah, that's the series I want to see. That might be the series I'm most looking forward to of the entire postseason, assuming, again, that the Warriors are some semblance of themselves. All right, let's talk Kevin Durant, because when you and I saw each other a couple weeks ago, it's because you were out this way to do a story on KD. You spent some quality time with him. You did this fantastic story that is that a week ago it came out now? Time has
a
no
week
meaning
ago,
anymore.
Yeah.
That was a week ago.
Yeah.
The story was Let It Go. So people, if you haven't found it or read it already, go check that out on The Ringer. But you got, Logan, you got one of the few sit downs and in-depth pieces on Kevin Durant since he first arrived in Brooklyn 3 years ago. And before I get into some of the fundamentals of the story, which was really great and had some really interesting insights into him, people see the result of a story like this. They go, oh, okay, all right, Logan Murdoch of The Ringer wrote a story on Kevin Durant. Oh, he interviewed him. Oh, he went to his apartment in Chelsea. But they just see the result. They don't know about the process. And if you don't mind, because I know the process behind you getting this story and your relationship with Kevin Durant, which goes back years, not just when you were covering the Warriors for various Bay Area outlets, but even before that. So if you don't mind telling that story, because I think it's interesting on two levels. I think it gives people a better sense of how the work is done and how reporters and players form these relationships in the first place to get the trust that it takes to do a story like this. But also, it's a great lesson for younger reporters to get a sense of how, you know, how to pursue these things and how to build over time. Because this was almost like a long play. This is years. This is almost years in the making, going all the way back to like, you know, teenage Logan Murdoch growing up in Northern California. So anyway, so like tell the story if you don't mind.
Oh yeah, for sure. I got to give a shout out to my mom and also a shout out to a guy by the name of Pat Walsh, because he gave me my first internship when I was 18 and coming fresh out of high school. And so because of that, I was able, this internship was in Sacramento and I lived in the Bay, but because of that internship, I was able to get sound. I was a stringer. I don't know if people know what a stringer is these days, Howard, but I was a stringer. Basically, I was getting sound for the morning broadcast for this radio station I was, you know, working with. And, you know, I would try to get there early because I didn't know what I wanted to do in music. I mean, I didn't know what I wanted to do in the journalism game, but I knew I wanted to be in it. And so I would go from the Bay. This is during the lockout year, 2011. And I didn't know, I would go from the Bay and I would go to Sacramento like three times a week just to get there early, see who needed to meet and things like that. I remember this one time Kevin Durant was coming to town and like KD was like one of those, the KD and the Thunder, this was the year they went to the finals and they lost to the Heat, but this is the team with Harden, with Russell, they were all babies. Mm-hmm. And I remember they were one of the teams that like when they came to town, like I wanted to get there early just so I can just soak up the vibe and, you know, see what's up. And so I remember I got there like 3.5 hours early, and Kevin was warming up, and I remember I had like pitched this story to, as a freelancer, to one of these to like Sacramento Observer, just to like write on Kevin Durant. I didn't even know if I was gonna get access to him, so I just got there early, had no idea like the notorious OKC media. the notorious OKC media relations team, who, you know, shout out to them. And so I got there early. Kevin was coming off the court, and I was like, hey, man, I don't know. It was just audacity. I just had a lot of audacity back then. And I was like, hey, y'all, I wanted to talk to you about your I didn't know any journalism protocols. And to be fair, the OKC media staff was like, hey, man, he's supposed to talk during – I mean, he could talk. The locker rooms aren't even open yet. I got there really early before the locker rooms were open to the media. And they were like, hey, the locker rooms aren't open yet. Like, can't really. We're not, you know, he's not available. And Kevin was like, no, I'll talk to him. And then we talked for like the artist he was like promoting or something. Like, he was into music. So he had somebody on a label. I forget the details. But we always like, we struck up with like a relationship. Every time he come to the Bay, like I was just around. You know, I was just intern. I was just, had to be in a building when like, you know, when I just had to be in the building just to like, it connects, man. I don't know how else to explain it. But then fast forward, I end up covering him with the Warriors, and then he leaves. And, you know, I've been trying since I got to the ring like a Kevin story. And, you know, we had talked infrequently, you know, since he left. I'd, you know, here and there would talk to him. And then, you know, this season starts to happen. And, you know, journalism places are starting to open up for travel and things like that. So I told him at the beginning of the season, like, I just want to write something on you. No response. But I told him, like, I know he saw it. So fast forward, me and my editor are trying to do a story on Kevin, like, top of the year. And Kevin gets injured. And then I'm like, and then he comes back, and then we're having this play of, like, I didn't even know if I was going to get access to him. Kind of just went on a whim to Brooklyn and was like, at least we can get a story done on the Nets during this time, you know, where Kyrie might be coming back into the fold for home games. There's a lot going on. They're pushing for it, pushing for a playoff berth, you know, or pushing for, you know, to win a title. And so, you know, we get some time on the calendar. I just go, and I think we went to go get dinner like the night before this, so you already know. So I go to a game and I see Kevin. This is the first time I've seen him since I'd say the finals 2019. Like, I hadn't seen him in person. Like, we talked a little bit, but I haven't seen him with the pandemic and everything. And I just asked him if he would give me some time, and he, you know, graciously did. And you know, he was very open during this time, and, you know, was really open about his relationship with Kyrie, and he seemed just letting go, you know, especially during all the with it was surprising to me because he was letting go at a time where I don't even think I could have the patience that he had, or I don't know what you would call it, or just the let-go-itiveness of what's going on with this season, with the Kyrie vaccination stuff, the Ben Simmons trade, James Harden, all these things. But he said it was like a zen to him. And it was really interesting to report out this piece. And it was one of the like most rewarding and difficult pieces I've ever done. I'll say that.
And it all based, in a sense, like on a leap of faith, right? Like you flew out here not knowing if you'd get him, how long you'd get him, where, what he might say or not say.
I mean, when I got off the plane, I was real thinking like, hey, I'll probably just do a net story. Like I'll probably just figure out something. But it was tense. You remember at dinner, I was like, man, I don't know. I don't know what's going to happen.
But it paid off. It paid off big time. You mentioned this, just all the stuff going on around him. And you say in the story how like his Nets tenure has been more chaotic. That was the word you used than probably he could have possibly anticipated, and maybe more chaotic. I would say definitely more chaotic than anything he went through in his Golden State tenure. So here's a quick rundown, folks. Year one, of course, KD's out because he's recovering from the Achilles, and that was known. He would sign and sit out a year. Year two, pandemic hits. He makes a debut at Barclays with no fans in the building. They trade for Harden. Kyrie mysteriously takes 2 weeks off. KD gets hurt, Harden gets hurt, all that stuff. They lose the playoffs. Year three this season, Kyrie's ineligible to start the season. They don't play him at all. Eventually, they do let him play. Harden gets disenchanted with the whole situation. He demands out the trade for Ben Simmons. Ben Simmons still not playing here as we head to the finals weekend. KD's injured again, 6 weeks. They've had two different super teams now in this time. KD's missed an entire season, pieces of the last two. And yet in your story, as you note, he's kind of zen about everything, about Kyrie not getting vaccinated and making himself ineligible, essentially, about Harden, presumably his good buddy from back in his OKC days. They trade for him. Then they have to trade him away just a year later. And there's not a hint of like resentment or frustration or anything. And I would say, Logan, like most guys at KD's level, and yeah, he's got two chips, you know, and two rings on his fingers already and an MVP award. But like most guys, they're sitting there going like, all right, I'm one of the best to ever play this game. I've got a finite amount of time to like fill in the resume. And I got a couple championships, but that just makes me want to get more and everything. And every little glitch along the way is messing with you. It's messing with legacy and all that stuff. You don't get any sense through your story, and I don't kind of get any sense just watching KD, you know, day to day, like that this is troubling him. I don't doubt that he wants to win and win more championships, but I don't see how he could be so zen about it. I think I'd be fuming with Kyrie, with Harden, with like just the universe conspiring against me, whatever.
When I interviewed him, I did press him on that. I'm like, dude, he didn't. In the transcript, I'm like, dude, did you? Like, if someone left my job, if I told him verbatim, I was like, if Raja left the real ones or like just was like a part time podcaster, I'd be furious. That's a direct quote to me from him before I'm asking this question, right? And then he looks at me and he's just like, yeah, you know, like. We love Kyrie and, you know, he has to do what he needs to do and we're with him and, you know, we're going to build and do all these things. But so, yeah, like I think the biggest thing that I realized during this time is just really how close Kyrie and Kevin are. And that wasn't that was something that you could see from afar. But I remember there's a part in the story where I'm talking about we were in Memphis and I'm talking to Kyrie and I'm really just asking, like, how long are you guys going to play together? Because it's very tenuous right now. At this very moment, there has not been an extension signed by Kyrie. It's just he has a player option for next year. And it's so when I'm asking the question, I'm asking it with the, hey, man, there's no guarantee that you're going to be back after your player option. Or even then, we'll see. And he's like, me and Kevin, we want to play together. This is something that we want to do. And that was there was a lot of eye-opening moments in the reporting out of this story, Howard, where I'm just like, I don't get it because, like you said, superstars, especially how we view superstars, they want to win in a finite amount of time. And that's not to say that Kevin doesn't want to win. I think he's just let go of a lot of these norms that we put on the superstars. And at the very core, he just wants to be one of the guys. And that's what he's always wanted to be. Even though his talent dictates that he'll never be one of the guys, that's something that he wants. And I think it boils down to he wants to be in Brooklyn because, as we both know, Brooklyn's a beautiful place, an amazing place, and he wants to be around his homies. And if he could win a couple titles while doing so, bet. If he can't, at least he had a great experience. He's here for the vibes right now. And that's not to say he doesn't want titles, but I think that he isn't putting everything on that right now.
And the wild thing about that, Logan, because I think we have all gotten kind of conditioned by the Kobe Bryants, the Michael Jordans, even LeBron, you know, built a little differently than those guys, but still, when it comes to championships, not, right? Like, LeBron's got a number he's shooting for. Kobe had a number he was shooting for. Everybody wanted to pass Michael. We never hear KD say that, and I think he'd probably be thrilled to do that, but it's just fascinating that he's just kind of wired a little bit differently than those guys.
It's funny because
I don't mean that his competitive drive is any less. I don't mean that at all.
No.
I just think in terms of like he understands that this game, this league, this world, it's not predictable and some things happen sometimes that take control out of your hands and you can only do so much. And it feels to me like, and you correct me if I'm wrong and I'll let you pick back up, but like that is what it seems like is where the Zen comes in. He knows how great he is, what he's capable of, and that he's as great as anybody who's ever played the game, perhaps, but that it takes luck and the right teammates and the right situations and things to break your way. And maybe it's just that. Maybe he's just it's a maturity of understanding that you're not in complete control.
Well, I think another thing was, especially in OKC and what I saw in Golden State, he thought that, you know, those titles were going to validate him in some way, that it was going to make him feel a certain way and that it was going to make certain people feel a certain way about him. And he thought, you know, after, you know, the numbers speak for itself, he outplayed Bron in that 2018 finals. He did in that 17 finals. It is what it is. And he thought that that was going to validate him in so many ways. And when it didn't, I think that he started to see that while a ring is great, you know, because it's something that I want, it's something that I always want, and it's something the championship is something that I always want. It's not the end all be all, you know, like it's not going to make me feel fulfilled in life because I tried it and it didn't. So I'm going to try to win a title. I'm going to try to do all these things, but I'm also going to find more balance. And I think that's something that we talked about was him trying to find more balance in life. And hoop has saved his life. It's gotten him out of a lot of different situations. It's got him made him more money than he's ever wanted to make. But he got to find that other thing that fulfills him as well. And I think that I don't know if he's fully fulfilled in Brooklyn, but at the very least, he's settled. And that's something he also talked about in the piece where that's a mindset, and we both know this just being in this wild journalism game. It's hard to be settled, but once you're settled, a lot of stuff don't mean as much as they used to because from a human aspect, his championship is being settled right now, being healthy and being all these things, and that's where he is right now. And if the championships come, cool, but I'm gonna make sure that everything else that I have validates me.
And I'll just say this, like, that is the healthiest mindset for a superstar of his caliber to possibly have, right? We got, like, Kobe was so single-minded, and it was true, he was, and I think sometimes to his own detriment in the rest of his life. And LeBron, I think, has talked more about the balance a little bit. Like, I think LeBron is a little bit more calibrated and not so obsessive about it, but obsessive enough. KD's mindset that you've just described, I think, is actually, you know, I'll leave it to the psychologist, I guess, to make that judgment on a more informed basis. But I feel like that's the healthiest way of looking at this. There's a couple quotes, actually. So he tells you, it's just experience, man. Shit, it's more stressful trying to be upset or have these emotions over something that I can't control. Like, there's the whole thing to a T. Like, he's not... He understands.
I would like to let me just give some background on that. I was after me pressing him just about, like, you know how the journalism thing goes, where you're like, hey, man, you have to prove to be or prove that, like, hey, this is coming in the middle of the conversation of Kyrie and, you know, just being in these other and just me pressing, like, are you sure? Just because, you know, it doesn't seem like. At least outwardly, because, you know, I'm 3,000 miles away. I'm in the Bay. I don't see him on it. I don't see their relationship on a day-to-day basis. So I'm really curious, and that comes from after the fourth question of me just being, hey, man, like, are you sure? Are you sure? Okay. All right.
You sure you want to put your career in Kyrie's hands?
More of that, yeah. But, like, are you sure that this is – are you good after this, you know? Like, where – and it's been documented. Just, like, he's felt – betrayed in a lot of ways in his life and in his career and things like that. And I'm like, are you sure that? And that was that. That's where that quote came from. And yeah. It was really like him saying, like, no, like, this is how I feel. And and that quote really speaks to, hey, man, I've gone through these things before, and that did it. That wasn't healthy for me. And yeah. So now I'm taking a different path.
All right. So, there's all this volatility in Brooklyn. We don't know, you know, are they going to escape the play-in? They probably will. They get out of the play-in, they'll be the toughest seventh or eighth seed in the history of mankind or something. And they still might not get out of the first round. We don't talk too much anymore about, like, what would have happened if he had just stayed in Golden State. And granted, the Warriors have been through a bunch health-wise. But, shit, if KD's still with the Warriors right now, you know, one more volatile piece, because he keeps getting hurt too. He's had some long stretches out the last couple of seasons, but still, they'd be the favorites right now for sure.
Yeah,
I know, Logan. I don't think you pressed him about the Warriors' departure too much in your story, or doesn't appear to. Maybe it was a conversation you didn't include that much of. But I feel like 3 years later, we still don't really know. Like, we've got little bits and pieces, and he and Draymond had their podcast where Draymond interviewed him and they talked about it. I still feel like we don't really know why he left the Warriors for the Nets, or even to an extent why he picked the Nets over the Knicks. Do you have any strong sense of those two things?
I think it was a combination of a lot of different things. I think some of it, because we touched on Golden State a little bit, where he said, he kind of took a shot at, like, beat writing and coverage of him.
But he didn't leave. I'm not going to be convinced that he left the Warriors because of, like, Ethan Strauss or because of Bay Area coverage.
I don't think he left off
of
that. I think it was a combination of things. I think, one, it was, you know, he's also, like, he did what he needed to do, and I don't feel like he felt, and this is me speaking, you know, because he'll probably be like, oh, don't get in my head. This is me speaking. I think that he didn't feel, at the end of the day, as wanted as he thought he should be. Or maybe got, and this goes to, like, the affirmation thing, right? Because even he says, like, yo, man, I'm a dude that gave back money. I'm a dude that was a part of the team, a part of this, and I didn't feel a part of it in the way that he wants to. And that goes back to, like, when I compare Kevin to, like, a Durant, a Steph, a Giannis, basically all-time greats, I think other all-time greats know that they could never relate to, like, the normal basketball player, right? Because, again, it goes back to my earlier point that your talent just dictates that you're in a special class of people. Just in general, that's just what it is, in a way that, like, you know, when LeBron – you could see when you see LeBron and you could see, like, a Steph, like, while they do mentor people, it's not on the same level of, say, like a Kevin does. Kevin will talk to anybody. Kevin will give game out to anybody, will talk to anybody, because it goes back to him just being one of the guys. I think Steph and LeBron know they'll never be one of just the guys, in the same way that Jordan and Bird and Kareem and Magic, just for the simple fact that they were so great that no one could even understand them in the way that they could, just because they were superstars. It's only there's like a small club. I think Kevin's urge to be one of the guys just wasn't reciprocated in the way that he wanted to be. And that's just it, whether it's from coverage, whether it was from his internal feelings and things like that, he didn't feel like he was a Golden State Warrior. And by one, I will say he will always be a Warrior. He will always be in that class, will always be a part of that. But I think it still messed with him that, hey, he wasn't Andre Iguodala. He wasn't Steph Curry. He wasn't Klay Thompson. He wasn't Draymond Green in the way that he didn't help build it.
Yeah.
And no, there's he could never overcome that if that's the basis of what he's defining as being a Warrior. But yeah, he is a Warrior. You go to the Bay, like, there's still Kevin Durant jerseys around here. There's still, you know, they still love Kevin around here. It's an awkward exit, but he will always be a Warrior. But by the definition that I think he's chasing, he'll never be that.
It's interesting because you do have a passage in the story where it is this idea that and he talks about this himself, that it was the Bay Area media was talking about it being the Warriors and Kevin Durant. It wasn't the Warriors, which happens to include Kevin Durant. It was like he was a piece apart from it. But that's just a natural human perception, right? This team existed. Yeah. It existed at a high level. And this is not to discount. This is not to go down the stupid path of like, oh, Kevin Durant was just, you know, riding the bandwagon. Like, dude won two finals MVPs because he was the best player in those series and he earned them. And they're not winning those. I would say for sure they're not winning those two championships without him. So he earned them. But they were an established entity before he arrived. And so it's only natural to say, okay, it's him and it's the Warriors and Kevin Durant. And that division, even just rhetorically, it's interesting how much that seems to bother him. But I think there's another element too, Logan, which is just to touch on this one element of particularly passionate, sometimes over the edge Warriors fandom, which is that the Steph contingent out there, and I love Steph as a media member. He's phenomenal for us to deal with, of course. I love watching him play. He's an all-time great. But it's interesting to me watching Steph fans, Warrior fans, Steph fans, however you want to characterize this group, that seemed resentful of Kevin Durant winning those two finals MVPs, that are still resentful that Steph didn't win the MVP the year that Iguodala won it, and wanted to make this about a Steph versus KD thing. I don't think we in the media did that. I think there was an element of Warriors fandom that was resistant to the idea that Durant could be so vital or even more important in those two finals than Steph was. I never heard that from Steph. I never heard from his camp or anybody else, but Warriors fandom did seem to have a difficulty, I feel like, embracing Durant at that level. Is that wrong? Like, I'm not in the Bay Area now, but is that accurate?
There's a few things to this. So, you know, Kevin's not without blame in this, and we've talked about this. He didn't.
And you wrote that, you know. Yeah,
and he and what I wrote, he didn't. He signed those 1-year deals, right? He signed those deals with an option to give him ultimate leverage. That is his right as a basketball player. That's his collectively bargained right. And he, like, kudos to him for getting the most bread he could. And also, while he was doing that, he did give back money to make sure Andre Iguodala was on the roster, right? But signing those 1-year deals puts a lot of pressure on the team who is trying to build long term, right? It just does. And so he's not without blame for the scrutiny that he got going into his free agency year. Now, he says that he should have, you know, that we as media members should have just waited to the end of the season to talk about his free agency. It doesn't work like that, right? Yeah. I would tell that to his face. It doesn't work like that. On the other side of that, I was talking to Steph earlier this year, and I think I wrote it too, and Kevin agrees with it, which is he kind of wishes that Steph and a lot of other guys kind of, I don't know how, but kind of wishes that they had his back a bit more. And Steph earlier this season told me, he was like, you know, I wish we kind of knew that we had to put our arms around him a bit more. I'm paraphrasing, but he says that we wish that we could have, you know, put our arms around him a bit more, but they really didn't think that the scrutiny would be that much. They thought that they could integrate Kevin into the system and thought that they could, and that everything, you know, once he's in the Warriors system, you know, the Warriors system, Howard, is vibes, just chilling. We're all a big family. Nothing could ever go wrong. But stuff in Kevin's mind and in also other people's mind, people every time something happened, like the Draymond, him and Draymond arguing in Sacramento, or him and Draymond, you know, arguing after a Memphis game when Steph and Kevin can't decide who'll take the last shot, right? And them and Draymond tell him, no, you need to shoot. There were a lot of instances like that in Kevin's mind and a lot of other people's minds should have been addressed, but they were swept under the rug as, oh, no, we're vibes. It's all culture. Oh, my goodness. It's great. We're good. We're the Golden State Warriors. We're just going to win titles and just have a great time. It's perfect here. And I think Kevin looks back on that. It was like, you know, it wasn't all perfect. And we didn't talk things out the way we were supposed to as a team should have in his eyes. And he didn't feel as protected as he should have been from the other guys. And I think, you know, I talked to Steph about this, and I put a piece you can also read on The Ringer. And he was like saying, you know, we should have put our arms around him a bit more and probably should have addressed things a little bit more than we did.
Yeah. There's a line in your story, Logan, where you talk about how KD and Kyrie had made this pact along with DeAndre Jordan, famously, they made a pact back at the 2016 Olympics to team up. And so, okay, they all come to the Nets together. But you say in the second part of that sentence, and they openly flirted with the idea during the 2019 All-Star game. Is that a reference to the Zapruder film of Kyrie and KD in the hall? Do we know, does anybody ever verify that that's exactly what they were talking about?
I think they verified it on all the smoke pod, I think. I think that Kevin did.
Okay.
I think that
he said that that the video was exactly what people perceived.
I think that's what he said. Yeah,
there's this weird thing we do in modern media and Twitter and everything else where it's like, if it looks that way, we just assume that's what it is. Then we all talk about it as fact. And sometimes it is and sometimes it isn't. So I kind of feel like that was one where it just was assumed and I wasn't sure that anybody really knew that for sure. So if they've validated that or verified it, that's different. Superstar friendships. So a lot of our conversation and the conversation around KD really comes back to this, right? Like, his relationship with Draymond, and that you know, that's kind of complicated. But hey, look, now they do podcasts together. They're buddies. But at one point, people thought, oh, that's what's breaking up the KD Warrior relationship. But it's more complicated than that. KD and Kyrie is certainly, I would think, a complicated relationship. KD and James Harden, I think we can see from the evidence of the last, you know, year and a half, these things are complicated. Even think about James Harden having, you know, Chris Paul comes into Houston. Harden and Chris Paul say, this is going to work great. We're friends off the court. 2 years later, boom, Chris Paul's gone. I mean, NBA friendships, and I think superstar friendships in particular, are more complicated maybe than the average, or maybe it's just because they're in the spotlight like with everything else. But like, I feel like we're always kind of trying to figure out, like, and sometimes we buy into it too much, right? Oh, well, they're really good friends. This is good. This is going to work. And like the friendship part of it and the basketball partnership, those things don't always align.
I mean, Howard, I know you know this, and I know I know this from life experience. You don't want to always be with all your good partners every single day of the week. Like, it just doesn't work. Even if you're close friends with them, it doesn't necessarily mean, hey, we can be all cool every single day. There's going to be bumping of heads, and I think it's a combination of just the stakes that the NBA has and to win a title, and also, you know, man, also the fame aspect of this. You got all these things that are happening at a, I think, you know this with Kobe and Shaq, it's so much more polarizing at this level. You know, one little thing can be blown up into a whole news cycle that these players watch and that they internalize. And instead of picking up the phone and figuring it out, they just, you know, it can fester. And that's hard, man. Like, If me and you, Howard, had a beef, no one would know about it, you know, because it just get on. One, we're not hella famous. And two, we would just get on the phone and just be that. But with these guys, you know, you got so many people leaking about these conversations, trying to get leverage, trying to do all these different things that can circumvent an otherwise promising relationship. And it's hard. And I really think that, you know, Kyrie and Kevin's relationship, it's a lot of things, but one of the things it is genuine. And at least they feel like they're in the foxhole together no matter what. And that's something that they didn't – I don't think that they felt with James Harden, especially during the back stretch of this season before he got traded. You know, even though Kyrie was away, at least he felt like he was in the foxhole. At least Kevin felt like he was in the foxhole with him.
Yeah.
Which is wild to consider. But they were on the phone. Kyrie and Kevin were on the phone after games, talking all the time. How are we going to do this when I get back? How are we going to do this when I get back? Whereas it didn't really – all communication kind of ceased between Harden and Durant after Durant got hurt.
Yeah. Yeah. This is why I say, like, it's complicated because you'd think it should have been more strained with Kyrie. And if anything – even if things weren't working out with James, like, all right, but he's at least there every day. So, like, it's I think some of these things just aren't meant for us to understand. Like, I don't quite get that, but it's not for me to get, and it's not for me – it's not my friendship to judge, right? So, but it is interesting. It is fascinating. You were in his apartment. You were in Katie's apartment in Chelsea. Which you describe as being an apartment. So I assume this is one of those high-rise buildings. But you also say it's a five-story apartment. He's got a five-story apartment within a massive apartment building. So he's just got like a massive
I don't want to give too much of where it is. I don't want to say too much, but it is like it's one of those converted like apartment buildings.
Okay, I got
you. That is just gutted is all I'll say.
Gotcha. Yeah. It sounds like it's an amazing space. You described a little bit of it, but like, what else did you? Is there art hanging up? Is there a pool table? Is there a sauna, like a whirlpool in the middle of the living room? Like, what's the coolest stuff you saw in his apartment?
The coolest thing that I saw in his apartment. First off, he has Pellegrino, which is like amazing. Pellegrino is like my favorite thing, and just it was like chill. That was great.
You described it as like a whole wine cellar full of it. Is there any wine in the wine cellar, or is it just Pellegrino?
Nah, it was just Pellegrino and like water and stuff, and like and then there was like snacks and stuff. One of those he had like a whole bunch of energy bars of stuff that I had never seen before, and they were delightful. Those were great. But I only saw the floor that I described, which was just, I just knew it was five stories, but I only saw the I was only there to like watch the podcast.
Yeah, gotcha. I was curious about the general environment and
I will say this though, toys. You realize the how should I put this? You realize the difference in tax brackets is what I'm saying. that's one thing you really realize when you go into a person's house, like a person of his stature.
Years ago, ESPN was doing that multi-part documentary, Basketball, A Love Story. And I worked as a stringer, as you mentioned earlier, freelancer.
Sure.
Where they brought me in to do a bunch of the interviews. And one of those was of Paul Pierce. I think that was the only one I did that was actually at anybody's house. Everything else was at hotels or offices or whatever. And so I did. I drove up to Paul Pierce's house in this gated community in north of L.A. And yes, that was one of those moments you're kind of driving up, walking in, and just kind of looking around. Like,
what's it like, though? Because what's it like for you? Because for me, it's like, I know I'm never going to be here again. I guess I'll soak it up. But like, it's always interesting when you're writing and going to one of these people's houses. What is it like for you when you do that?
Nah, same thing. You're just kind of wide-eyed and trying not to be wide-eyed.
and you're also cool like playing this balance of like not, you know, you're there to do a job, right? Yes. And they know you're there to do a job. So you're balancing the like, just, oh man, I'm at this person's house with like, I got a job to do. Like I'm not a necessary, I'm in this gray area where I'm not a guest, but I'm not a guest. So I have to like kind of tread lightly. It's an interesting balance.
For sure. Plus part of our job is never to be in awe. Right. Like that's the whole deal. And so and it's not like I got to see much of the house. It's not like he was showing me around, giving me a grand tour. But, you know, you just kind of look around a little bit like, oh, it's very nice. You know, take note of it. And how
I said this in a piece, though. He had an elevator in there, which was just trippy, which is kind of crazy. It was like I'd never seen somebody have an elevator in their house.
Me either. But if I had that many floors to myself and I'd customize the space, I'm definitely getting like a fire pole.
Yeah,
Or maybe a slide. I want a slide from my fifth floor down to my first floor.
That'd be tight, man. Just go right and do the podcast. Just slide right into like the pod area.
Exactly, and then a climbing wall to get back up to the next floor. How about that? So I like build in some workout in it as well.
There we go. That's only like $1,000 a month in Brooklyn, right? Right? Isn't it like you can get that real easy?
$1,000 a month to rent the rocks for the climbing wall. Yeah. all right. So before I let you go, we're recording this within, I don't know, a day or two after the latest bit of LeBron viral content, which was LeBron saying on his own show, The Shop, that if there's one guy in the NBA he'd want to play with, it would be Steph, which coming the same week that LeBron's team got knocked out of the play-in, and LeBron's not playing, And there's all this just weird stuff. Steph responded with a kind of a non-response, and I don't know.
Let's dissect that. I want to dissect that response. He said, I'm good. He said, the thing with Steph is, this was very hard because I did something with Steph earlier this season. It's very hard to decipher what Steph is talking about, right? Mm. You have to really just look through the transcripts because he'll say a lot, because he says a lot of fluff in his quotes. A lot of stuff.
He knows how to pad it a little bit.
He knows how to pad it, right? So I remember I profiled Steph earlier this season, and I remember looking through the transcripts, and I'm like, dude, it's like a different code of the language. But what he said was, I'm good. That's what he said. He said something
wrong.
I'm going
to read the
quote. Let's read the quote.
Okay, he went on 95.7 The Game. Shout out to 95.7 The Game.
Yes, sir.
And Steph says about LeBron wanting to play with him, well, he got his wish. He was captain and picked me for the last two All-Star games. I don't know if that suffices, but I'm good right now. Whenever you get the curiosity or interest of what it would be like to play with arguably MVP caliber dude like he is and one of the greatest of all time, cool. It's amazing. We all could live in that fantasy world, though.
Forget everything he said after I'm good, because he shaded him twice, Howard. He shaded him. He was like,
shaded?
A little bit. I mean, I don't know. I know you get aggregated. This is popping. But he said, well, he had his opportunity is what he said. And then he goes, I'm good. And then he does the Steph thing where he goes, it says like it feels good to be, you know, noticed. But he knew what he was doing. Steph knows what he's doing when he's saying that stuff. But what's interesting, it's just funny that, I don't know, man. Like, LeBron does this type of stuff where, like, towards the end of the season, he will always be the center of the narrative, man. He will always do it. And it's fascinating because especially how Steph and LeBron's relationship started, man. It started with LeBron, with Steph being one of the little homies of LeBron. Like, LeBron has a lot of little homies that he just goes and he'll support them and he'll give them the LeBron cosign. But he did it with Durant, too. But there's only been a couple of people that have just said, nah, I ain't the little homie. Back up. And then go to the finals and beat him. So he has a complicated relationship with that, I think. And Steph is one of those guys that I know he respects. I know he has a lot of love for Steph. But to hear him say this at this stage, when you handpicked Russell Westbrook to be on your team as your point guard, and this comes out as we're going into free agency, the timing is just off for LeBron to do something. It's off, but it's also on. It's a LeBron move. Like, I'm going to go compliment something's going wrong right here. I'm going to go compliment somebody else, right? Yeah. Something's going wrong. He did that in the All-Star break. Something's going wrong. I'm going to go compliment another GM. Something's going wrong. You know, we're not making the postseason. A clip comes out. Hey, you know, I wish I could play with Steph one day. I mean, it's a LeBron thing to do.
It kind of is. And there's a part of me, Logan, that wants to just like give it the benefit of the doubt and take it at face value that LeBron simply gave an honest answer to an honest question on the set where someone says, well, who would you want to play with in the NBA? And we do. We play this game sometimes with guys, and it's not a game. It's just such a legit question. Like, who are the guys around the league that you'd be really fun to play with, whatever. But we're usually talking to either a star player about role guys or role guys about a star player. It's not usually stars about other stars. And so I think a lot of guys in the league would probably want to play with Steph, right? Like, that's not...
That would be good, though, Howard. But if it wasn't any other superstar that said they want to play with Steph, boom, it's good. But we know this for the last 19, 20 years that LeBron is the most calculated dude in the league and one of the most calculated dudes in the history of professional sports. So when he also knows how powerful his words are. And so it's hard for me to just say like off the cuff, like, hey, man, he just said that he's going to use this. He's going to use this excuse. I'll just ask a question and I just answered it honestly. What do you want me to do? But if anybody else could say that, but no one else has LeBron's track record of just him. He's the same guy that just said, yo, it would be great for us to trade for Anthony Davis. Why wouldn't we? As a negotiation for a trade to get Anthony Davis to be his teammate is on the verge of happening. And he gives that cosign and it happens a few months later. That's just what LeBron does. And that's why it's kind of just like, why would you say that?
It's like we can never take it at just face value. Like right. There are no accidents. There are no accidents when LeBron is talking about this stuff.
Never. And it's respectable. It's cold. It's cold game. But at the end of the day, it does feel like cold game.
Yeah. All right. Before we wrap this up, I do want to like highlight one other piece of the Kevin Durant thing, because I feel like it's the quote that went the most viral, because the people who make things go viral are us, the media. And this was catnip, because you asked Durant about Adam Silver's remarks about maybe keeping the locker rooms closed forever, not having the media have any access periods in there. And KD gave a quote that warmed the hearts of all of us in the media. I promptly put him on all five slots on my MVP ballot on the basis of this quote alone. quote, I think I would never do that, folks. Quote, I think that'll hurt the relationship between media and players, he says. This is Durant talking about closing locker rooms. Quote, that is the only way that you can build a relationship with somebody that's going to be riding on you regardless. And of course, you and I would both heartily agree with Kevin on this. Absolutely the case. I'm glad he spoke up, especially a player of his stature and his caliber. For him to say this, I think sends a very strong message to everyone, and including the league, including union leadership. And I never thought for a minute, Logan, that out of 450 players in a given season, that all 450 would agree on something like this. There's a wide variety of opinions, like there would be within any group of people that large. And I was very happy to see that. I actually went out of my way last week at a Nets game to tell KD, hey, thank you for mentioning that, putting that on the record. And he reiterated it. So glad you asked him. Glad he answered honestly and earnestly. And just wanted to shout out that quote before we left the topic.
That was interesting, man. Also, like, I think a lot of players feel that way. You know, I think more players feel that way than the general public knows, right? Because they always see the Twitter clips and things like that, and they see, well, you know, we're getting – I think what I've learned just covering the league is that the general consumer, I don't think that they realize the work that we do, you know?
Sure.
And just cultivating those relationships and doing – I'll be honest with you, man, and you know this, I wouldn't have been able to do the story without locker room access and just getting to know players and things like that. But the players want to be known. They want it. They want that. They want people to talk about their initiatives. They want them to cover these things. They just don't want to be covered. They don't want to, they feel like they don't want to be covered. They feel like they're covered unfairly in that other way.
Yeah.
But
I think that
it is, if you ask any player in the league if they want to be covered, if they wanted people to get to know them, I think a grand majority want to be known and want that to be happening. And, you know, and that goes back to Kevin wanting to be one of the, like, he wants to be understood. He wants to be humanized. He thinks that players should be humanized. And kudos to him for knowing that, like, hey, the way to be humanized is to interact with humans that are going to be covering you regardless. It's been hard to kind of see, and this, we don't want to speak on it too much, but it's just been hard to cover. It's been harder to cover the league during this pandemic, and we all want this product to be covered, and I'm glad that he did that.
Yeah, no, absolutely. Thanks again, KD. Thank you, Logan Murdoch. I've kept you very long here this afternoon, my friend, but this has been a blast. We will have to do it again.
This is an honor, man. You know how it is, dog. You know what it is, OG. You know I always come to your show, man. I love your show, man. I love you, man. This was awesome. This was like it was like when we was in Brooklyn, you know? It was like that, getting dinner. This is what this was like.
We should have done the pod during dinner. That was a phenomenal dinner, too. So.
I don't know if the streets is ready for the dinner talk, but for sure. This was like 40% of the dinner talk. So yeah.
Yeah, no, there's a lot that would have to have been off the record. We can't give it all away either. He's Logan Murdoch. Find all this stuff on The Ringer, the story on KD, the story on Steph, which was also phenomenal from a month or two ago. And listen to his podcast, of course, Real Ones, which he co-hosts with the great Rajah Bell, one of my all-time favorites.
The great Rajah Bell. I love him. Ra-ra.
He's the best.
Mondays and Thursdays.
He's the best. All right. Thanks, Logan. Be good.
Thanks, bro.
Okay, that's it for today's show. My thanks again to Logan Murdoch. Thanks to our producer, Shelby Royston. And thank you all for listening. Remember, you can hear Chris Mannix and me every Tuesday on The Crossover with all the latest NBA chatter. And then on Fridays, it's me and a guest. Don't forget to rate, review, and subscribe to The Crossover wherever you get your podcasts. And hit me with all your feedback on Twitter at Howard Beck.
Did you know a 2018 study showed half of prenatal vitamins tested had unacceptable levels of heavy metals? I'm Kat, mother of three and founder of Ritual. When I was 4 months pregnant, I couldn't find a prenatal I could trust, so I created my own. Ours is made traceable, third-party tested for heavy metals, and recently earned the Purity Award from the Clean Label Project. But don't just take my word for it. Get 25% off at ritual.com/prenatal.
Hi, Drew and Jonathan Scott here, reminding you that a lot of life's firsts are better with help from American Family Insurance. Like your first home expansion or your first big lightning strike. There's a first for everything. Get the right home policy at the right price with the right help from American Family's agents. Life's better when you're under American Family's roof. Insure carefully, dream fearlessly. Get a quote and find an agent at AmFam.com.
Products not available in every state. American Family Mutual Insurance Company, S.I. and its operating company, 6000 American Parkway, Madison, Wisconsin.